Hey, Heather here. Designed to empower individuals to be their best self, the Ron Kitchens Always Forward Leadership Podcast brings fresh understanding to the issues today's leaders are facing and equips them with new perspectives and resources to lead forward. Welcome to today's conversation with Ron Kitchens and Brad Lominick.
Hey, thank you for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast, where each week we bring to you random thoughts that just come to our mind.
No, random thoughts with Ron Kitchens.
So each week we talk about the issues that are facing us all as leaders. And joining me as always is Brad Lominick. Hey, Brad.
I'm just trying to be productive over here. I am trying to bring the, I don't even know what the right phrase is, bring the juice, bring the vibe.
How, instead of being productive, we talk about outcomes?
Well, this is a big tension. I mean, as we jump into this issue, lots of my friends and your friends would say that productive means that I show up on time and that I put in the time and effort, that I punch the clock, that I'm willing to stay late, be early. Productive is built on the process that I am consistent and I'm dependable. There is a new generation, Ron.
There is.
There's a young generation that says productivity is more about what I get done. Don't judge me on how I get it done. Just judge me on what I get done. And the outcome is now the rule of engagement, not necessarily the process to get to the outcome. And a lot of older leaders today would say that the process was equally, if not more, the part that I judge the most compared to the outcome.
Well, I think you're dead on. And so I have to be, you know, full transparency. I love millennials. I love what millennials stand for. I love their work ethic. I love the fact that they are outcome driven. You know, I'm on that cusp of baby boomer Gen X. I kind of think I'm Gen X because my mom's a baby boomer and you can't be in the same generation. So, you know, I can remember being 19 years old, started my first business, the Gas Shack. So
the
I don't
gas?
Know if we have the Gas Shack.
Shack?
So a convenience store.
Is that a convenience store?
Ozark, Missouri,
okay,
the Gas Shack.
It sounds like Stop and Go, like
in
my hometown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where our motto was pumping to please. We had t-shirts.
Oh, good Lord. Pumping to please.
That's
the
it.
Gas Shack.
We would wash your windows. We would also, you know, sell you a Snickers bar and a really bad microwave sandwich.
Does it still exist? Is it still there?
It's been torn down. My dream was destroyed.
Man, moment of silence for the Gas Shack.
Urban revitalization took the Gas Shack. But I would work 100 hours a week because I thought that's what success looked like.
Right.
I thought if I was just working all the time, the outcomes I wanted
would take care of themselves.
And it wasn't until my banker, who was this great mentor for me, came and said, what are the outcomes that you want? And why being here 7 days a week, working unbelievable, crazy hours, how is that going to get you to your outcomes? You're not running a business. You have just bought yourself a really lousy job.
Mm.
To me, that was life-changing. But it's still one of those things I fall into. I still pride myself, you know, on being the first one at the office and the last one to leave. Now, I got scolded the other day to say I needed to quit doing that because several team members kind of casually mentioned to each other they were trying to see if they could beat me to work.
And you weren't doing the George Costanza where you'd left your car there all night, were you?
No.
So they're like, man, Ron, it's burning the midnight oil.
This guy's just,
never leaves.
The light on, automatic on and off.
Uh-huh.
So,
Yeah, no.
And so, you know, millennials, you know, I just saw some great data and I'll get it slightly wrong, but the gist is that there's this belief that millennials are lazy and they don't really want to work and they're entitled. So the first thing easy to deal is the entitled thing is I want all of our non-millennials listening. I want them to walk over. There will be a mirror somewhere. There'll be a picture you can see your reflection in. I want you to look in that mirror. I want you to stare into your eyes and say, I bought the trophies. I bought the trophies. There's this belief the millennials of this trophy generation, they didn't buy themselves these trophies.
Right.
We did because we felt guilty.
Yeah.
Because we were trying to project an outcome that we hadn't done the work to get. So we wanted our kids to be happy, have this outcome that nobody had earned. Millennials, on the other hand, want an outcome. They believe in social mission. They are charitable and committed to that. Now, they want to do it in a different way, but different isn't wrong and it isn't bad. It's just different.
It's different.
But I think Gallup's data said the average millennial is working 7 hours a week longer than the average baby boomer or Generation X.
Is that because they're working at home and they're working
all hours of the day, because it's about outcome, right? And they get the outcome is the new trophy. They want the validation of the outcome and they're driven to that, but they don't need to do it between 8 and 5.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that a lot of us are struggling with who grew up when we were led based on show up to the office, you're here 9 to 5 and that's your time. Regardless of if you're doing nothing, if you're playing solitaire on your computer, you're still here.
Yep.
Therefore, you're being productive because you're sitting in a seat, which we could argue about that for a long time. But nowadays, we're actually getting more, what you're saying from the data is we potentially are getting more process and outcome.
Yep.
It's just that it doesn't look the same as it has in the past. Based on you have to be here during these office hours, this is the time that you're on the clock, and then the rest of the time of your life is to do whatever you want to do. It's owning the pressure and the responsibility of the outcome, regardless of the process potentially changing. I use this terminology a lot, like when talking about how to be productive and how to get things done and the process of change, because that's so much of the tension is around what's changing around us that we don't understand. You know, the way we actually accomplish tasks. So at one time, the idea of mailing a letter that took potentially 7 days to turn around a signature, a agreement, whatever it was, that turned into what became a fax document that then turned into an email document that now turns into a Google shared document.
That's it.
And all of a sudden, we went from 7 days of a process of productivity to accomplish something, an agreement, to now where that's a real-time exchange. You're actually talking to the person on the phone or whatever, and you sign the document while you're both looking at it. None of us would say that that's bad. That's incredibly productive. It's efficient. It's better. It's faster. It's all the things. But if we looked at it and said, nope, we just want to go back to the days of mailing the agreement through the snail mail, that's the way it should be. That's the way it was when I was growing up. That's the way it has to be forever. That's bad thinking. So we have to think about that across all the areas of how we are efficient, how we accomplish tasks. And there's never been a better day. I mean, every new day is bringing more opportunities for being more productive. It's just we have to think, and if you're older or if you're a leader who's been around a while, you have to be just as aggressive and hungry to find ways to be more productive. And let all those young cats on your team speak into making you way more productive than you think you actually could be.
Absolutely. And don't get lost in the tradition. I saw a car the other day and I thought it was actually a joke. It had a bumper sticker on it. We'd pulled in on boat to get gas. And so we're standing out pumping it. And I look and this car, fairly new Buick of some kind, it's got a bumper sticker that says, if it's not King James, it's not the Bible. And I thought, oh, that must be some kind of joke thing. So I asked the guy about it. And oh, no, he proceeds to tell me that that was how it is. And there isn't anything else since then. And I,
the only version.
And so all I could think of was phone or text.
Right.
So I said, you know, I love leadership and communication. So do you phone or text? And he said, oh, I don't carry a cell phone. I make all my phone calls from home.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lord, please don't ever let me be that guy.
Right.
Because that guy is irrelevant. That guy, if a crisis comes, he has no capacity for change. And I saw some data the other day that was talking about how the news and negativity of the news. And when you ask people, is the world safer or more dangerous? And people tell you, oh, it's more dangerous. And they'll tell you all the bad things going on in the world. And this data said, actually, it's the safest time it's ever been on Earth. Fewer people die of disease, fewer people die of violence, fewer people die of that. We just know
more. We're just hearing about more of it. Yeah.
And so we've got to, as leaders, discern the information. And so I think when we get back to millennials, it's this discernment that you talk to a millennial and say, what's important to you? Sit down with the millennial. A group of them is even better. See what's important and write it down. You know, they believe in the values of individuals. They believe people should be treated with respect and dignity. They believe hard work should be rewarded. They believe in charity. They believe in instantaneous charity. They don't want to wait or give somebody a check and let somebody else decide how it's going to be used a year from now. They want to be part of the solution. Millennials, to me, look and sound a lot like the greatest generation.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like folks who came back from the war.
With technology.
Yep, but with the technology. These are people who have the same values as those men who came back from Europe and would no longer allow segregation. They realized the value of a man's character and the content of his soul was more important than the color of his skin. They realized that women had kept the country alive, and they were no longer willing to segregate women into a secondary role. They realized the value of education. We saw this huge boom, a lot because of the GI Bill, but because people valued education. We saw people value communities. We saw great funding of charity and social conscience in our country that we take for granted today, but didn't exist before World War II. And I think the millennial generation, not only are they huge in size, I think this is going to be the greatest generation since that World War II generation. But I think this could be the generation that solves real social and economic problems that have been kicked down the road.
Yeah.
A lot. I love millennials and I truly believe in their capacity.
You're going back to, again, the big issue here and the big aha is outcome-based. That the idea that, does it mean it's the wild, wild west in your organizational culture and that everybody's free, they can do whatever they want, they can come and go as they please? Maybe, but it is figuring out what that looks like for you and your team and what works, but also then saying the way we're going to measure your effectiveness is all based on hitting the goals that we have. So you're not lowering your standards.
No.
You're actually raising your standards and you're raising the level of accountability that goes with those standards and with hitting certain targets and compensate people based off of it. You know, I would much rather have compensation tied to me controlling the ability for me to actually make something happen compared to me being compensated based on showing up and doing nothing. And for a season of our world, that was the way you got compensated, rewarded, measured.
Time and service.
You got it. And those days are over. Like that ship has sailed. And for all of us who want it back, it's not coming back. So you have to change and be thinking about the way you measure people being productive is all built on the thing that is actually being created out of what their productive time is doing, not just because they're, again, showing up in the office and sitting in a chair and looking around going, well, I'm here, so I guess I'm getting paid, right? Those days are over.
We hadn't talked about this, but, you know, I think one of the things that strikes me as we talk this through is that maybe the uncomfortableness that people are feeling and talking about isn't the millennials. It's an internal thing. Is I have to manage differently.
I
have to lead differently, and it feels hard and awkward. When I took my current role 13 years ago, we had some people who worked satellite. They worked part-time in the office, and I said, you know, I have to build culture. Everybody has to come back in. You have to work full-time. You have to work in our offices. We're all together. As our organization now thrives and we have this culture, we have people for seasons who say, hey, Ron, in this season that I'm in, I've got to write a lot. I've got to do some creative things. I'm going to work from home 2 days a week. Here are the 2 days that I'm going to do that. Here's how I'm going to be part of the team. Here's the outcomes that we're agreeing to. And because we do that together, it not only is liberating for them to succeed, it's liberating for me as a leader, because we now have agreement of what success looks like.
Right.
Where before, if I'm a bad leader or I'm overwhelmed, success is 40 hours a week. Don't file any complaints with HR.
Right.
Don't rock the boat.
Yeah. Set in your area, in your cube.
In your area. Don't screw with anything.
Don't cause any problems.
And, you know, don't steal the Post-it notes. And, of course, we're exaggerating, but not dramatically.
Yeah.
You got to be on your game with millennials, because they are.
Yeah.
Because it's highly motivated. A bad analogy, but an analogy nonetheless, is we've gone from a plow horse society to a thoroughbred society.
Mm-hmm.
We have people who have no limit on the information they've given. They've been raised to believe that they can overachieve. They have access to all of the knowledge about what success looks like and all the knowledge to define their own world. They're racehorses. They want to sprint. But if management still is trying to put harnesses on plow horses, yeah, there's a friction. You think that racehorse is wrong, but the reality is if your outcome is to put horses farther down the road, the faster they go, the more results you achieve.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And at the end of the day, management was really built around the premise that I have to watch over people to make sure that they're not causing problems, or that they're moving in the right direction.
Or validation of my existence.
Exactly.
Is about how I manage in these categories. So those categories are important, not the outcome of those people.
Right. And so if you truly want to look at productivity, which is production, which is producing, which means that you're actually creating something, how do we measure creating something? Well, that's all based on, again, what is the product that I've actually created. If a product is the way you define productivity, then we have to let people run like racehorses in order to create a product. And our job as a leader is not to get in the way of that. It's actually to create a system that allows them the least friction to achieve the result. And if that is you work from home and you're flexible and you have lots of room to run, then that is the best way to be productive. So when you think as a leader about productivity, it's how are you removing all the barriers, hopefully all of them, if not all, then as many as possible, to allow your people to be productive. And if you have people who don't want to be productive, then that's a people
issue.
That's
a different thing and has nothing to do with generational issues.
Exactly, because they're looking around going, wait, I have to actually do something here? Because I thought my job was just sit in a seat and take up room and, you know, be a warm body. And that's also a problem. And a lot of those people now are sticking out like a sore thumb because all the racehorses around them are saying, I'm going to go run. And you're the plow horse going, wait, well, if nobody hooks me up to the plow, then I'll just sit here and do nothing.
I'll just sit in the paddock.
But racehorses, man, you let them out, they're going to go. They may not go around the track. They're going to run somewhere.
And your job as a leader is to designate where the track is and to designate where the finish line, what the outcome we're trying to achieve, what the track we're going to run is, and remove those obstacles. There's still going to be potholes. Potholes still show up. That's what great people, great runners do, is they know how to avoid the potholes or jump over them. But if they hit them, then as a leader, we have to go help them.
I'm ready to go make something. That.
I know. Let's go build something. We got Bree to
start a new company.
Even though Bree is refusing to speak on the air today.
Well, she should be speaking on this issue because she is a tried and true, bona fide, card-carrying member of the millennial generation, the work-from-home group. Do you have anything you'd like to add here?
I think the
what we've been talking about
takeaway that we can get from this is that it's not necessarily changing the outcome. We're changing the mindset. The managers, the leaders out there, you have got to change your mindset because us millennials are not lazy. We just work differently. And different to you might look intimidating at first. It might look like we're not working hard because we work at different hours or in different spaces. But that does not mean we aren't working. We might be working twice as hard. So I have the luxury, and it has been a huge blessing, because I commute in. I get to work from home one day a week, which is a huge help. And I get so much done when
you
I'm
get
there.
Way more done when you're working
so
from home.
So much done.
Because you're not stopping at people's offices
exactly.
and catching up. And
I'm a social being.
Right. Yeah.
Really, it's just fingers to the keyboard.
And what's interesting is the Z generation, which is behind you, they're going to even be more productive with technology because of the fact that they've grown up in a digital age and they can accomplish things in 3 minutes, what took a now 29-year-old 7 minutes, which took me 14 minutes, which took my dad 27 minutes. It's a whole new mindset of what productive is going to look like because they can multitask like nobody's business. Have you seen these teenagers today, Ron? Like, they're crazy. They can do 7 things at once, and they're all doing them with such ease of accomplishing something because they're so used to the platform through which they're accomplishing it.
Yeah, and it feels to me a lot like America must have felt like when we went from an agriculture economy to an automation economy. It must have felt that way. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. And Bree, thanks for pitching in.
Our certified millennial over here.
Certified telecommuting lifestyle millennial.
Hold on, guys. She's updating her Instagram as we speak. She's doing a Facebook story right now.
She's updating my Instagram.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
She manages that too. So, all right. Thank you. And we'll see you all next week.
Thanks for joining us for the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. We hope today's insights will help you develop into the leader you dream to be. To subscribe to Ron's blog or to submit a question for Ron to discuss in a future podcast, visit ronkitchens.com or tweet him at ronkitchens.